Hello and welcome to episode 23 of the Pokeballs podcast. I am S9 Vibe and I am joined by my lovely co-host Osiris. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good, mate. S9 Vibe. We're going to refer to you as that this
week. We're just not going to use our real names. I don't know why I went that route. I was just like, ah.
I know.
We don't need our real names. We don't need our real names.
Doing good, mate. I'm doing good.
Good.
Doing good. Getting ready, gearing up for the
Teal Mask. Less than a week now. We are recording this on...
just over 4 days, mate.
On Friday, so it is, 4 days away. So
4 days, 15 hours, 12 minutes and 7 seconds.
It's actually, right now. It's crazy to think that we are actually that close, really, because, you know...
it's mad.
We've been harping on and on about when is this DLC dropping. And obviously, I know we got a release date a while ago now, but, you know, it just feels surreal for it to sort of finally be here because, like I said, it feels like we've been starved for content for such a long time.
Yeah.
So
I just hope it lives up to kind of expectations. I've got a horrible feeling that it might turn out a bit like the Isle of Armor and the Crown Tundra, where the Isle of Armor was a lot smaller and the bulk of the content was in the Crown Tundra, where this might be a smaller bit of content for the Teal Mask, and then the bulk of the DLC content is going to be in the Indigo Disc. But to be fair as well, there's not much time between releases of these two DLCs, so this is just to tie us over till we get that second part. But yeah, I'm very excited. Regardless of how much content, it's going to be new content. It's going to be very good. So don't get me wrong.
Do you know what's mad? And I know we've talked about this. There seem to be, I don't know whether it's because the DLC is coming up, but like, I'm seeing a lot more stuff on Twitter now. I guess it makes sense because they're ramping up to the DLC. Just random promotional bits from Nintendo, particularly Terror Raids. And as I mentioned to you, they've been paying streamers to do the Terror Raids.
Yeah,
which is
bad.
So weird of Nintendo. Like, they paid Valkyrae to do it. She's like literally one of like the biggest female streamers, or if not the biggest female streamer in the world. And that's it come up on my thing the other day, and I was like, what? And it was like, yeah, sponsored stream, and she's like doing a bloody Mewtwo raid, and I was like, what? But I thought that was kind of cool. Pardon? I didn't watch it. It was a long stream. Let's see if I can find it while we're talking, but.
That's mad though, that they're paying content creators.
She had like 6,000-7,000 viewers at the time.
Wow.
Which
that's nuts.
Is pretty crazy.
It's good publicity for the games. It's nice to see that like Nintendo Pokemon are kind of doing
it. Was
that
an 11-hour stream. Was it all Terror Raid stuff? No, she played Valorant for a bit.
Wow.
Because she did Terror Raid, she played Valorant. No, yeah, she just played Valorant for most of it, but she did the Terror Raid for 2 hours. She did Terror Raids for 2 hours.
Fed up with the Terror Raids.
I wonder
if she beat it. I wonder if she beat it or not.
Hang on, let's have a.
That Mewtwo Terror Raid though, mate, was, you know, you've been crying out for something difficult to do for the longest time.
Do you still think it's glitched, or do you think, is this deliberate? No, I want to hear.
I do have that Espathra like footage where it is getting like boosts between turns, which kind of, they're not like, you know, they're not shown in any sort of description. I do have the footage of that where Mewtwo is getting like Coal Mine boosts in between turns, which is really weird. Because this Path Rat is obviously their opportunist ability. Is
so she gets a boost.
Turns. So
that's
it's
weird.
Getting additional boosts, which seems really weird. I don't think it's glitched though. I think it is just that's how it's meant to be. Just as hard as that.
Bro, she's doing it with a fairy type Mew. She's not gonna do it. I don't think she's gonna do it. Why isn't it working?
Oh. She needs to be subscribed to the Osiris channel to get all the best strats on beating Mew.
She does.
They're not doing that. Look at the raid timer.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's done.
She just got knocked out with her fucking Mew. But yeah. But I think it's cool nonetheless. Like it shows that they're like, I mean, Pokemon is growing in popularity now. Like.
Yeah,
streamers do tend to stream it when it comes out, but you know, I think as they add more content slowly over time and all that, I think, you know, it becomes more, again, I think like the customization that you're going to be able to do in the Indigo Disc with the little rooms, I think could be quite that, like, streamers might enjoy that, you know, like any type of like high customization, I think people enjoy quite a lot, you know. particularly the women, you know, because obviously they just like to customize shit. Animal, well, like Animal Crossing is a classic example. Like they'll just spend hours just decorating the houses and stuff.
You're pigeonholing a whole gender into.
I'm not pigeonholing.
I
know guys enjoy it, but I'm just
I'm
saying.
Joking,
like,
I'm messing around, mate. No, I know. I get what you mean. I think the fact is, I think with the DLCs, hopefully we get a lot more character customization as well. I think that's something.
It was
that
so
a lot
crap. It was really crap.
Are
wasn't it?
Crying out for, because yeah, I mean,
outfits,
you can buy
mainly
a bunch of hats and a bunch of gloves. In Scarlet and Violet, which is not really ideal, is it? So hopefully that helps. Like you say, you get your own room, it looks like, in the Indigo Disc. So that's going to add to it as well. And then you've got the Terrarium, which, I mean, is just one aspect in the Indigo Disc. I know it's not what we're getting next week when the Teal Mask drops, but something that we've got to look forward to. I think with those additions, yeah, it's gonna really open the games up. We're going to have a lot more content, and hopefully a lot more people are going to get involved with it, because it feels like the post-game activities in, you know, when we've got the double pack finally released, it feels like there's going to be a lot to do. But outside of that, mate, there's lots going on. Like you say, you know, you've had all of the recent updates with the competitive format as well. We've got way more prize money up for grabs now with VGC, TCG, Go, and everything like that.
Mate, the TCG is looking pretty wild, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, they tend to get larger prize pools than us anyway, but, you know, they can earn a lot of money now.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing what they've done. Very sad on, like, the cuts to, obviously, Australia not getting an international championship anymore, but...
Seems weird.
It happened back in the day, though, when they used to have... We used to have four nationals in Europe. We used to have the UK, Germany, Spain,
Italy.
No, before Italy, we had France.
Oh, wow.
As one of them. But France was one of the first ones to get pulled, because the attendances in France were never that big. So you get, like, maybe 100 max, you know, people turning up to the national in France, and that's a national level event. Obviously the competitive scene was a lot smaller back then, but so that was one of the first ones to get cut. So they have done it in the past. It makes sense as well, because you're putting all this money down for...
Do you know what would make a lot of sense? Is that they did one in... I know they have a different format, but if they did a similar style tournament in Asia, just so they've...
The circuit.
Yeah. I know they have a different circuit, but...
It's all under TPC, not TPCI, so it's down to them to run it. And that's why there's differences between the formats, you know, so they control their competitive format. If it was TPCI that ran worldwide, then you would see the cohesion between all of the different regions. It would all tie together, which would be, in an ideal world, perfect, right? Because you want to have everyone playing the same circuit throughout the year, but because TPCI have that kind of control over that area,
the only thing I do find it fascinating about the Asian format is that, again, we're harping on VGC here because we don't know much about, we do know, but we don't really play TCG, but in the VGC, like, the formats are so brutal and the tournaments are so brutal that, you know, the players are really good, because you just have to be, right? I mean, we saw a world this year. Japan sweeped VGC. They won every category, you know? They're just, like, they're normally best of one until top eight, you know? They're just different breed. They do loads of different styles of tournaments. So, in the sense, I kind of think it's cool that they get, because it means that, you know, they're really good. But I do agree what you're saying, in the sense that, you know, it would, cohesion, it would make a lot of sense for just... It would just be a lot easier to organise stuff if the whole world was under the same thing. Because then, I don't know if that would be the case, whether you could play if you are a foreign international in an Asian tournament. But at the moment, you're not allowed to play unless you're an Asian national, are you, in a lot of the tournaments? So,
yeah.
Whereas anywhere else, any of the other TCPI tournaments, it doesn't matter where you're from, you can go play in, providing you can register. So,
yeah, and I think, you know, speaking to Ray... at Worlds, and you know, he lives out in Japan now, and I'm sure he won't mind me talking about this. It wasn't anything top secret or anything. So I think that the general consensus with the player base in Japan is they would prefer circuit like ours. They would prefer tournament circuit setup like,
I think it makes sense
from TPCI, right? Because their qualification structure is, like you've already mentioned, brutal. You've got to go through qualifying for the actual event, you've got to do well in, you know, online tournaments, which are best of one. And then, you know, if you manage to get through those, then you've got to do best of one until top cut. And it's, you know, it's a crazy structure that they've got there, completely different to what we have. Very, very punishing. Yeah, and I think the thing that Ray was talking about is, you know, I think the fact that Japan had a clean sweep at Worlds didn't help support the case for them to change that circuit.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Know, I think if they absolutely got wiped out by, you know, every other, like, if they weren't even in the top cut or in contention for winning any of these, like, different...
But it makes you think, right, if they played other format, like, if it was a format like us, right, it just feels like... Because our circuit is easy, right?
It'd be interesting
to qualify, at least, and the way we play. Like, obviously, they know how to play game. They can still do best of three, but would they be even better in our format? Yeah. Like, would Japan, like, absolutely just demolish everyone all the time? Yeah. Or would they struggle because they're only used to best of one?
I think they generally would be better, but then it would probably, rather than just dominate completely, it would probably raise the game of everyone everywhere, you know what I mean? It's like that thing, if your practice partner is a league above you, but you're practicing with them all the time, they're going to elevate you to kind of on their level at some point. So I think it would work like that. I think just to make it a bit fairer for that area of the world, you know, I think it would probably benefit the player base overall, but it's not going to change anytime soon, I don't think. So
my only worry with, again, not, it's hard, right, because we spoke about the whole competitive scene as a whole, right? I don't, like, they put my money into it now. Is it going to start to attract more normies? At the moment, I don't think so, because I still think it's low enough that, like, it's a lot of money right now. The prize pool is still really good. Like, it's insane now. They literally tripled the prize pool for across the board for all competitive tournaments, for all the different games, which is insane now. You can earn, like, a lot of money in TCG, and even in the VGC is still decent, but, you know, will it hit that point? We don't want it to hit that point where you start getting, like, do you see these random guys that are like, yeah, there's loads of money in it, so I'm just going to play type thing, you know? Like these chess players.
I don't know if that makes any difference though, mate, you know? I think you've got to have a passion to come in and play the game. You've got to like competitive Pokemon. It's a lot of money to invest in just going to a tournament.
I think you're right, actually, because...
I think, like, you're not going to just chuck away, like, £65 or however many that converts into euros away or dollars into a tournament just for the sake of maybe winning. I think you've really got to have a passion for it. You've got to learn. It's not something that you can walk into at the moment and just pick up and do well at. You've got to put the time in. You've got to build your team. You've got to understand the format. You've got to understand metagames. You've got to understand team comps. You've got to understand board states, things like that. There's so much information at a competitive level. And then base level, you've got to know, like, all of the Pokemon, all of the moves as well, you know, to really be, you know, very good at the game and stand a chance at winning. Because if you rock up and you've not put the time in, it'll show on your tournament result 100%. You know, you might get unlucky, but for most of the time. So I don't really see that. But the thing that I think, going back to that point, is we want more people coming into the format, right? We want, as a competitive circuit, we want it to be bigger. We want it to be better than what it is. And more players, more involvement, more people interesting, more eyes on it as an esport, quotation marks, I think is better, because it will grow the format. It will make it better for the player base. So I don't think it's a bad thing at all, even if we do get more people coming in.
That's not my main worry. And maybe this is just me being selfish, and maybe this is what happens when you actually have a large... when you're a proper esport. But my main concern about it growing to a large state is getting to a point where you just can't enter a tournament if you want to.
I don't think it would ever get to that point. I think it's a fine balance. You know, I've spoke to Chris Brown in the past. The issues that TPCI have with booking venues with capacity,
the numbers aren't consistent.
They have to estimate, because they have to book these venues like a year, maybe sometimes 2 years in advance, right? So the only data that they're going off is previous formats, right? Previous years, right? So if that, and they can only estimate to a certain point. This is why we had, you know, venues last year, smaller capacities last year, because they were basing their numbers off previous VGC years, right? Because you can't book a venue like with 2 weeks notice and knowing that you've just had a brand new game dropped and you like, oh, well, we've got way more players than what we expected to have, even based off our estimation.
That was nuts.
They've got a 20% growth estimation on competitive Pokemon. And I think this is a really important thing for a lot of competitive players to understand that, you know, TPCI has a really hard job at estimating numbers. And if the games do better than what expected, then, you know, it's not really their fault when they're like, we only expected like the player base to grow like 20%. It's actually grown like 80%. So it's really difficult. And the other side of the coin is they don't want to overcompensate, because if you're buying or putting your deposit down on a bigger venue and you don't sell the tickets that you're expecting, then you're at a huge loss. And for some Pokemon, you know, a company like Pokemon, if they're looking at the number sheet at the end of the year and saying, why have you booked all these venues for like capacities of like 10 to 15,000 and you've only like filled them like a third, and we've had to, you know, dump out, like we've lost like, you know, millions of dollars or whatever it is throughout that season, they're going to then reevaluate. That's going to really damage the competitive scene. So it's a real fine balance, but because it's,
you're
not
right though, but it's not a profit, right? It's not a profit thing though, is it? They don't do it, they don't make money from it.
No, but they don't want to be
wasting
like,
money,
wasting money on it as well. You know, I think that's the big thing. And so it is a real fine balance. It's never really communicated like that. That TPC, I have this like absolutely impossible job where, you know, anyone would find it difficult.
No, I agree.
Have these issues. And I think it's like, it's just hard to have these expectations of what you think the capacities are going to be the following season. But I do think it's something. Getting back to my main point here, it's something that TPC are constantly thinking about and constantly adjusting. So as we go throughout the season, I would imagine the venues that we do have access to, like we've seen with Lille, right, in October, the capacity for VG is like 760, which is amazing, right? So everyone that wants to go to that event should be able to get a ticket, right?
Yeah, hoping.
Yeah.
The biggest problem with tickets, right, and again, I guess, I don't know what it's like with other competitive you know, formats or games or scenes or whatever, sorry, I couldn't find the word, like, they tickets sell out really quickly, right?
Mm.
Back in the day, I mean, you used to be able to, in recent years, it's unless you go and buy the ticket when the ticket drops, or try and register when the tickets drop, you can't, your camera's out of focus, by the way, you basically can't go, because they will just sell out. But obviously, I first started playing, and obviously when you was playing, it was a lot easier to just, you could just get a ticket. But like I said, now, if unless you're on the hour, which a lot of the time they don't split the ticket sales up, you can't get a ticket. That's it. That's what happened last year. Like with Liverpool, I tried to go to Liverpool last year. I couldn't book the ticket, so Lee graciously offered to try and do them for me, but. Right. Just went too quickly, so we couldn't get both. Yeah. So it's just like, it's just insane. But like you said,
brutal. And I think last season, like, you know, what I've just been talking about is probably a prime example of the growth that was not expected based on, you know, previous years' data that they had to work off. It's just Scarlet and Violet's just done way better than I think what they ever expected it to be. So it should kind of catch up this year, and I think
it is crazy when you think about
of a time
how strong Scarlet and Violet did. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
It's all right. Used to it.
Just now you're making me feel bad. Like Scarlet and Violet did so well considering all the shit that they got. Mm-hmm. Like it's just. It just goes to show how strong the brand is, you know, and that they are, regardless of what you think about the performance of the games, they are taking the right, they are going, moving in the right direction with the games. You know, whether or not you think they need longer development time, whether they should stop making games, whether they should do DLC, whether they shouldn't do DLC, whatever you believe, they are trending in the right direction, right? Scarlet and Violet broke every kind of record that the Pokemon games have ever had. you know? So it's great. And I'm hoping with the new console that comes out next year, whether that be, will most likely be a very similar version of the Switch, you know, we get that better performance. It's never going to be amazing because it's still handheld. Personally, I'm under the assumption of, or the belief that I would still prefer them to do two, as in one console, one handheld, like they did with the DS and the Wii. But
I don't think they're ever going to go back to that.
I don't think they're ever going to do it. And I understand the appeal of a Switch, but because of the Switch, the way that it is, the way that it exists, you're always going to struggle. You know, obviously it's going to get better with time. You know, there are like thin and light handhelds that exist. You've got the Steam Deck, you got the Lenovo have one now, you got the Asus one as well, the ROG Ally. You know, they do exist, but, you know, Nintendo have never necessarily been at the forefront of performance when it when it comes to their consoles. But
was some information dropped like yesterday and the day before about the Switch 2 being kind of showcased recently to some developers and
at Gamescom, you know,
behind closed doors.
And, I have the article actually.
Yeah, and the power of it seems to be, you know, very good, you know. You know, I think the rumor is it's going to be like 12 gig RAM. You know, so the PS5 is 16 gig RAM. So it's very close to a PS5. Very close, you know. So I think it's going to be a very powerful system.
I don't think it's not going to be, I don't know. It depends on, it's not going to be like a PS5 powerful. I think it might be probably more close to like a PS4 powerful, because you know you gotta remember it's still a handheld, because like even like the powerful Steam Decks and the ROG Ally, things like that, you know, they still have their limitations because it's still a handheld. And
of course, but it's never going to be PS5 level, but I'm saying
it's going to be a big jump from what we currently have.
So exciting though.
And I would imagine that the next Pokemon game maybe is I think we should, right? Because if it's coming in, If we look back at the release dates of previous consoles, the Switch come out, we know it's coming next year. The first half of next year, I think, was what was seems to be confirmed or whatever.
It's more talked about now to be like that lead up to Christmas, like a November release.
Either way, you know, I think it will be, like, I think the new Pokemon game next year, whatever it ends up being, will be very, fingers crossed, be optimized. I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be optimized for the new console.
Yeah, and there was, I think there was like a demo of Breath of the Wild was one of the it was just a demo. It's not going to be like reboot or anything for the new the system, but I think that was the game that was showcased on just showing off the performance of the new console, whatever it will be called. I think it's going to be very similar to the Switch. The fact that they've got, like, you know, they
backwards compatibility
on the you know, the detachable Joy-Cons, that's like a thing that no other handheld can do, because Nintendo have like the patent on
Lenovo did it. They have done it. Lenovo have just done it, a detachable Joy-Con
Joy-Con
thing. Yeah,
I'm sure it's copyright. It's all that.
Well, I don't know how they got around it, but
see a lot of the kind of knockoff handhelds, they never have detachable because it's illegal, because Nintendo have all the rights with that.
They just released this, so I don't know if the patent run out, because patents only last so long. But it's 10 years, but it hasn't been 10 years. I don't know how they've got around it, but yeah, they essentially have Joy-Cons with their.
Wow, with I wonder this. If it's to do with how they attach.
Yeah. Or the shape, or I don't know exactly how it works, but
wow.
But this exists now as well, so
that's a complete rip, isn't it? Just
Well, I mean, they all handheld. I mean, I know this obviously has the Joy-Con, so the Joy-Con like esque controllers that come off, but
it's a complete
they're all gonna look similar handheld gaming devices, because this is a form factor that works. You know, Nintendo proved that it works. It's a good size, so you know, they might be slightly bigger or slightly smaller. Mate, this is such a random tangent. I was at a K-pop concert yesterday. It's the guy in front of me was on his Switch Lite, like on the lead up before everyone was playing. I was like, my guy has brought his Switch Lite. I was playing an indie game. I don't know what it was, but it's a lot smaller than I remember it being.
They're way smaller, aren't they?
Yeah, so
yeah, nice and compact. Yeah, it's but no, mate. lots of good things kind of on the horizon as always, but the Teal Mask creeping up very slowly, and along with the Teal Mask we obviously had all those leaks last week. So we will get into a section now, but before we do, this is probably a good point to just give you all that are listening a little spoiler warning. So we'll kind of chapter it in on YouTube.
I'll put a sign so up you can, here,
and you know it's coming. And if you are listening on Spotify or anything like that and you don't want spoiled, then just skip ahead of this about 5 minutes and you should be good. But we'll take a deep dive, because I covered the leaks that got dropped that like in a sporadic form last week on Twitter, started appearing from data mined information from the actual games, images of some of the new Pokemon and stuff like that. So we're about to talk about it right now. If you want to skip, make sure you do so you don't get any spoilers. But yes, so some of the well-renowned data miners on in the Pokemon community got a lot of information out, actual clips, like actual pictures of the new Pokemon, and lots of information from the DLCs. So there was information on Ogapon and the masks and its different forms that we had as well. Uh-huh. Obviously, we can't show anything on the podcast because it will just get taken down, and we prefer this podcast to
stay up,
really. Yeah, so my video got taken down, and I think every other one that kind of covered it with those images has slowly been removed up to now with copyright blocks and stuff like that, which is understandable. But the biggest thing to kind of come out from it probably was in regards... Are you ready for it? Because you don't know, do you, mate?
I don't know. So just to preface this quickly for anyone, I normally avoid spoilers because I prefer to be surprised with stuff. But, you know, it doesn't bother me too much, so it's not that big. I know we want to talk about it today, so Lee's about to tell me what it is because I haven't actually paid attention to any of it. So
yeah, so we got... a bunch of information on the different areas that are going to be in Kitakami, so a list of all of those, where uh-huh. you can go, different areas within the game. We got confirmation of some new moves that will be coming to the game, new abilities as well. We also got some, let's say, oh man, why is my mind just went blank with all of this? There is a lot of information to cover. So new abilities, new moves. We've since then subsequently had the move tutor moves come out as well. Information about that. But like I say, the biggest thing to come out was probably the new form of Ursaluna, which is a blood moon Ursaluna. Damn. Which is, I think, coined to be a steel ground type, I think. Which is going to be...
interesting.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure on the typing of it yet, because the typings at the time of the leak weren't confirmed, but that was something I've kind of heard banded around. So, like, obviously nothing officially confirmed, but Blood Moon Ursaluna is... it looks awesome, dude, as well. It looks mad. It looks such a cool design. So, but
how could you get more broken? Oh, mate, if this thing's more broken than Ursaluna currently is...
yeah.
I mean...
it's going to be scary.
It's going to be scary. But yeah, go on.
It's going to be very scary. So there was that. There was the evolution of Sinischar as well. Poltergeist, evolution of that. So that was revealed, what that looks like as well. It keeps the same ability as its pre-evolution. It was confirmed to have the authentic mark as well, like, you know, Sinistee and Poltergeist have. Or it wasn't called an authentic mark. It was called something different, whether that's due to translation issues or not. And then the Ogapon forms as well. So it has different forms. It has like a water, fire, grass, and a normal type form as well, with different masks that it wears, which looks pretty cool. And it's not a Clefable as well, mate. So that whole theory is out the window. But it looks very cool. It's a very cool looking Pokemon behind the mask. So we got to see it without the mask on in game, which was kind of cool. And the ability of Ursaluna, the Blood Moon one's pretty interesting as well.
So it's not Guts?
No, it's not Guts. It's a brand new ability.
Go on.
So let me just pull up the information on it here quickly. I'll need to...
what, interesting for competitive or just in general? Or?
Yeah, for competitive, really. That is the big one. That is the biggie. Give me a second. I'll pull up all the information on the stuff so I can talk about it. Yeah. So Ursa Luna Blood Moon form. I wish I could show some pictures of it.
You can show me afterwards.
I can show you after. Ogapon without mask. And yeah, it's different kind of stat boost because Ogapon gets a new ability as well. Let me just pull this up. All the shiny sprites as well were revealed. So we know what the shiny forms are going to be of like Diplin, the Blood Moon, Ursa Luna, Sinistra, and
are they at least decent or are they crap?
Diplin's very good. The other ones are a bit hit and miss. And obviously the new Hero 3. So the new ability for Ogapon is it does have it's called Embody Aspect. The Pokemon's heart fills with memories, causing the teal mask to shine and this Pokemon's speed stat to be boosted. Now this stat boosting changes depending on the mask that it's got. So if it's like one mask, it'll be speed. Another mask will give an attack boost. Another mask will give a special defense and a defense boost as well. Let me just see if I can find the Ursa Luna one as well, which is, where are you? Mind's Eye. So this is the new ability for Ursa Luna.
I'm ready.
The Pokemon ignores changes to opponent's evasiveness. Its accuracy can't be lowered, and it can hit ghost types with normal and fighting type moves.
That's good.
So yeah.
You just hit any Pokemon. Good. You don't have to worry about
pretty
it.
Pretty much, yeah. So it's very cool. Like I said, the typing of it.
But you might not be getting stabbed from those types, though.
No. And there were some images as well shown confirming that the Hisuian Pokemon will be out in the wild in Kitakami. So like the White Stripe Basculin, you'll be able to catch them.
Oh, that's good.
I'm assuming all the Hisuian Pokemon will be catchable in the games as well, which is pretty nice to have that kind of confirmed. No information about shiny lock information yet. Like I say, we've had information about shooter moves, so Grassy Glide we know is going to be coming back as well, so maybe that's something that we see Rillaboom have access to once again.
It's going to make Rillaboom really good
on typing and stuff like that. But yeah, so that was pretty much all the leaks. Like I say, that got pulled off the channel, so sad about that, but never mind. It's yeah, that was everything that came out, and we got some images as well alongside it, which was pretty fun.
Spoiler warning over.
So yeah, all that to look forward to. Like I say, because we know that information, I don't know how big the teal mask is going to be.
Okay, so moving, just I think this would be a good segue into, we briefly spoke about this, kind of. So you're working on a video when we're working at theories on when exactly the teal mask will drop, which is cool because we don't know exactly the time. But also, you know, there's been a lot of debate about whether we will get the Indigo disc this year now.
Yeah, it has, mate.
So the biggest nod to this, it not coming out this year, is in the competitive VGC format, the video game, Regulation E, which is a new format which starts in October, ends in January. And that allows you to use all the Pokemon from the teal mask. It does not mention the Indigo disc.
I'll just dive in here and segue, because interestingly enough, Regulation E was only scheduled to run through until the 30th of November originally.
Oh, okay.
So it was originally scheduled October the 1st to November the 30th, but I believe on German, Italy, and Spain, Pokemon Home app updates, it actually runs until into January now. But I think, I don't know if that's been confirmed everywhere. That's the thing. So if it's running until November, I would still expect, I don't know, mate. I still kind of think I'm going to get it this year.
I still don't think it makes a difference, really, because why not have it, you know, like you can still have the DLC drop. Like, it just means that the format's longer, which is what everyone wants anyway. You know, you don't want it necessarily to, okay, it'd be cool to have it straight away, but you want a bit of time enjoying, you know, that whatever Pokemon come along with the teal mask, you know, and then you do the next format with the Indigo disc. So I don't think it necessarily 100% confirmed, if this is the case, that the DLC will not be until next year. But I still think it'll be this year, providing they don't have many problems with the games. I still think it'll be like November, late November or mid November.
Yeah, as long as you don't have like a Chestnut, Iron Treads, Great Tusks raid event issue again.
Give me PTSD.
So I think we'll probably get it December time. I would love to see it in November, but I don't know. I think an early December release might be more fitting, I think, with how things are lining up. And then if we do get a new format in January, it gives players a couple of weeks to play the DLCs, get used to the new Pokemon that are available, kind of get gear up for that first tournament when it comes around in January. So that would make more sense, but we'll wait and see. But
just
back to the times though, mate, because you talked about times. I think it will be a 9 a.m. because we had a tweet this morning as of recording the podcast, tweet this morning from Japanese Pokemon account saying it would be released Wednesday morning. So I'd imagine it'll probably be like 9 a.m. Japan time, which equates to like 1 a.m. UTC plus 1 in the UK, which is like, I think, 7 or 8 Eastern, and then 5 p.m. On the West Coast. So it'll be around that time, I think, when we'll see the Teal Mask officially, time-wise, get released on the 13th. But it'll be the 12th for the US, which is pretty nice. They get it a day early.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Lucky them.
So, you know, it's crazy. This time next week, DLC will be out, baby.
We'll be there. Yeah.
We will be there. So, you know, exciting time. Finally, we were saying before the podcast. No, we said it at the beginning, but I feel like we've been waiting for so long. It just seems weird that it's like, it's not really hit me that it's here.
It's crazy as well when you think about it, because the Mewtwo raid event is running for another week right after this one till the 17th of September, and then which is normally when the terror raids kind of used to, when we had this kind of nice running flow of the terror raids, like we'd get a new one announced on that Sunday evening when it finished on the 17th. So we potentially might see another 7-star terror raid on the 18th dropped, but this time it'll be an absolute breeze. We'll probably see Annihilate come back for a little showing, because he's kind of disappeared the last few ones, which I've not been sad about. But I think this next 7-star raid that we get, whatever starter Pokemon.
How do you feel about the Mewtwo raid? Like of it being really hard. Do you think it was stupid to make it that hard, or do you think it was refreshing, or do you think they should have done a middle ground where it wasn't that hard?
So I've got two kind of sides that I sit on with this, right? Like, one part of me comes from a competitive angle where I'm like, I love the challenge, right? I love the challenge of being able to beat this thing. And this was definitely a challenge, right? To do in-game solo, even online, right? You need the right partners. You need the right builds. You can't have anyone kind of freeloading with you in a raid online. So you need everyone kind of pulling their weight. So in that respect, I do really like it. The difficulty level, I think, is great, right? But if I look at it from the other side of the fence, where I think they've advertised the crap out of this event, right? They've really hyped this up. They've made CGI animation, like trailers for it and everything. So they put a lot of work into it, because it is a big event, right? It is Mewtwo. It is the battle for Mewtwo versus Mew, which I think is very cool. And I've loved the whole kind of cycle, promotional cycle, the event itself of it. But then to drop it in game, to make it pretty much as near to impossible to solo. And you've got to say impossible to solo for your kind of casual player, the kids that are like looking forward to potentially getting Mewtwo in their games, but haven't got an online subscription, right? And it kind of pseudo paywalling the event completely from these people. It's kind of dangling the carrot in front of them, saying, this is what you can get, but to get it, you're going to have to be able to go online to do it with friends, because maybe you don't watch content creators who put strategy guides out to help players. You're figuring things out on your own, like a lot of players do. You know, there's a lot of players that just want to play these games casually by themselves, don't really have any interest in looking for content online to help them, want to figure it out themselves. This one is just a little step too far, and I feel like because you are almost paywalling it, it does leave a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth on this occasion. There's parts of me that love this raid so much. I think, like, what does it entail for future 7-star raids? Legendary ones that we're going to get. But again, I think it comes back to the point of being like, you can't shut out, you know, these players have paid for the games, and you should just make it not accessible unless you've got an online subscription to get it in your game. If you're going to make it that hard to do, you know, solo, I don't know. It's a hard one, mate. Mm. It's hard.
Yeah, I agree. I basically agree with everything you just said. But, you know, at least if we do get another Terror Raid, another legendary Terror Raid, we kind of know, we can assume it's going to be of a similar difficulty, you know?
Yeah, I don't think it'll be as hard as Mewtwo.
No, I think Mewtwo is a particularly hard one, to be fair. So. Yeah,
I think if we get like Lugia Ho-Oh next, if they go online, you know, they might not. They might just jump down the line and go something completely different. But, you know, I don't think it'll be as difficult because we're not going to be getting something given out to us to take into the raid. Like, we, this time around, we got the Mew, right, which gets the Omni Boost, right, to go in against the Mewtwo. So inevitably, they're going to make that raid harder to match up with why you need the Omni Boost on the Mew, right? So I can't see them doing a mystery gift legendary like for every single Terror Raid.
I don't think it'll be like that because you can only catch it twice, once, can't you?
Yeah.
So it wouldn't work really. I think it'd be unfair. Although in the raid deck, in the dens in Crown Tundra or Isle of Armor, whatever, could you only catch them once again? Or could you catch them?
You could only catch them once. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it's not the other world then.
You could only encounter them once as well. So once you caught it, you couldn't ever encounter it again. So the Terror Raids, you can go in and farm for the items, which is a nice aspect, you know, afterwards. But yeah, you can only catch the mightiest Mark Pokemon once.
Fair.
So, yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of looking forward to the next one, what we see, what it's going to be. Is it going to be Venusaur? Is it going to be Blastoise? Or is it going to be just like one of the Paldean starters?
They might leave it. They're probably going to leave it a little bit, I think, after this one's out. Because
we've got time to play the deals. Until we finish that 18.
Yeah, but I think this is going to give them time until they... They've got to give people time to play the DLC. I think
the teal mask as well, because I think that the mightiest marks have more implication in that DLC than they do in the teal mask. So I think they're going to stagger it to finish it in the indigo disc, where we get those all 18 types covering for mightiest mark Pokemon. So yeah, I think
yeah,
it's going to be interesting. I would say the Paldea starters are probably going to be the next 7-star Terror Raid, so we'll probably get like Skeledirge next, maybe. I don't know. We'll wait and see, mate. But all exciting.
All exciting. Bit of a tangent. I don't know if you've seen people were gassing out. We got a few announcements in the Presents Before Worlds about some of the stuff that they were teasing or that were coming out soon. Two of the things were these two animated shows. There was the one about the girl who gets into the trading card game, TCG.
Yeah.
And then the other one was called Pandaren Wind, which is basically just like a short anime, basically, all coming out on YouTube. But we can watch the first minute of it because it looks amazing. But basically people are gassing up because how amazing it looks. And it does look really cute. So we'll watch the first like minute because it will give you an idea. So I won't spoil the whole episode. It's on YouTube now. So if you want to go watch it, episode one.
I'm on TV. In celebration with this as well, they've got a mystery gift running for a Sertitan that you can get in the game at the moment. So
it just looks amazing.
That's great, dude. Have you not watched it yet?
I haven't watched it yet, no.
No, it's very, very good, mate. It's yeah, this will be a mini-series as well, so this is going to continue with more episodes. But yeah, they've captured Paldea perfectly in it, you know, everything. It's so good.
The Gimmigal, people are saying how cute Gimmigal is.
It totally changed my mind on Gimmigal.
Yeah.
I was like, I love this little Pokemon now. It's very cool.
It's so cute.
Yeah. And then I love that they've got the whole the lore about, you know, Tinkerton as well, and how it kind of hunts down Corviknights, and this it plays in this first part as well. The Corviknights stealing the coin, and then we get the glimpse of the little Tinkerton now, which is amazing. It's like time to go after it.
Don't go smash a bird with my hammer.
Yeah, it's such a weird rivalry, right?
Yeah, I don't really understand that.
No. I'm sure the Pokedex description, I don't know why, I want to say like Tinkerton eats Corviknights, or is it just goes after them? I don't know. I might be just making that up. That might be just something in my mind that I've just dreamed
of. It looks so good.
It's amazing, dude. It's really cool. Yeah, I would definitely recommend it to anyone. It's not very long as well. It's only about 13 minutes, I think.
11 minutes, the first episode.
Oh. So. Yeah, so yeah, definitely check it out. But yeah, these little projects that they're doing, very cool. Yeah, definitely go and check it. Check it out.
I think we've I think we've covered most of the stuff this week.
We have a goodie bag this week.
We do have a goodie bag, so we can dip into that now. Like I said, we'll have a lot more to talk about next week because obviously the DLC will be out. So
yeah,
goodie bag time. Very excited. So we can move on to Scott's goodie bag. Let's just have a make sure I've got everything. Some cool ones and some not as well. No, they're all cool. Okay, so the first one. First two, actually, we love. We've been talking about we bring it up every now and again the old console modification with the Game Boy and the you know, the Game Boy SP as well. Lee's done that with his, and also he did it with his DS, which is a big pain in the bum. They look amazing, but they are really fun. Particularly the Game Boys, you can pick up the Game Boy Advances. Sorry, you can pick up shelves for them really cheap. So if you have an old one lying around, you can get them on eBay for like 13 quid or something. Yeah. They're not a lot of money and they're really easy to do. So someone had done, this is a modded DS Lite inside a Game Boy shell with a GBA shell mounted onto the top of the top screen.
What?
So are you ready for this?
Mad. DS are horrible to do any work with as well. Wow, that looks so cool, doesn't it? Wow, that is amazing. I love that. That is great.
That is wild, like, isn't it?
I like full life Pokedex. That's amazing. That's probably one of the coolest mods that I've ever seen.
Yeah, the color, I really like that. Everything as well. Like, they put a shell on the top screen to make it look like a Pokedex and obviously just sprayed the bottom part.
It's amazing. Is that like, are they, wow, it must be like, I don't know how they've done that bottom screen because it's like a touch screen as well. So I wonder if they've still got the touch, if it's still got the touch sensors in that bottom screen or not. That's very cool.
There are other pictures making it look more like a Pokedex, but
yeah, that's very cool, isn't it?
I wonder if he gives any specifics about it in the thing.
It would have been very cool to have it like open like the side to the side like an actual Pokedex does. Oh
my god, has a tutorial on how to do it on YouTube. That's wild.
There we go. Wow.
Only 7 minutes long. What the fuck? Okay, we're not going to watch the whole thing, but if you want to go and have a look, this guy's channel is called Tom VDCR. But yeah, it looks like he has a guide on how to do it. I wonder how easy it is. There's a lot of Dremeling there, but I wonder how actually difficult it would be, but you know, it'd be interesting to see.
Difficult, mate.
Bit of fun though, if you like to tinker. But yeah, anyway, so I saw that. I was like, oh, that is awesome. And then I found this one as well. This Pikachu one. I don't know if I've seen this one.
No way. So sick. Insane. That is so cool. SP.
Chonky boy, baby.
Wow.
Because what a lot of people do with the SP ones is if you get a clear shell or even a coloured shell, or a translucent shell, doesn't matter if it's coloured or not, you can put an image in the back of it. So you can do shit like this. So it looks very, very cool.
I love the yellow. And they've got the inlay, the pink inlays. The
matching inlays for the buttons.
Very, very nice. That's very cool. I'm not a big fan of the clear cases, though. I don't like... Me personally, I never really like seeing like the board and the stuff inside, and I know that's like something that a lot of people like to see.
I don't. This one is done particularly well, though.
It is done. It's a beautiful console. Like, don't get me wrong, but just my preference. I've never been a fan of the clear cases, but it's very cool for being able to kind of put your own imagery in like that. But yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah, very cool. How's nice. I should have shown that last week, but we had light on. And then two more things. This guy had put an Execute tattoo on his leg.
That's hilarious.
Was pretty wild. Wraps around his leg.
Wow.
Not sure the one I would choose, but you know, fair play.
Yeah.
Very cool. And then the last one, this isn't necessarily Pokemon related. So I don't know if you follow like photography or whatnot, but I don't necessarily follow it, but I understand sort of the current trends because I kind of work with it a little bit as well. But, you know, you always, like every trend, you know, nostalgia, old trends come back, you know, and you get waves of nostalgia. And, you know, there's always been a big, for the photographic and even cine, you know, enthusiasts, you know, analog film has always been a big part of, you know, people's, they still love it. It's still really popular because it gives you that different look, it gives you that defined grain. And to that sort of extent, you know, we've got, we're seeing it, we see it a lot in K-pop actually, and even people just going out and about, people have started to use like old video cameras, like that look trapped, like old digital video cameras to record stuff because they like the old, and even just like, going back to like even just old digital cameras that just look crap, but they've just got that weird, they've got that particular look that people like,
and the grainy look,
the grainy look, and they, you know, it just, it's old school, right? It can bring you like to early 2000s kind of vibes, right? And so people have started to use Nintendo DS cameras as their video cameras and or picture taken. So this guy on YouTube recorded a whole music video on a Nintendo DS.
What? That's nuts.
But like, it looks so old. It looks so old school.
That's mad. This is on a DS.
This is on a DS.
Wow.
But it looks, it's got that proper like old school, like I said, early 2000s like look to it. I just think it's sick.
That's cool.
And then like in this article as well. So this was a DSi. There's like, let's go see if I can find it. People taking like their DSIs to like different places around the world. So this guy took it to, go away.
I took my DSI to Yosemite.
To Yosemite, and then he just took pictures of it. And
that's very cool.
Like, if you've got the right lighting, they don't look too bad.
They don't look bad at all.
So that, I was like,
that's very cool.
I just thought it was really cool.
I love that.
Just like old, just old school vibes. You know, they don't look the best, but obviously,
yeah,
it just gives you that. You know, it hits you with that nostalgia because the cameras aren't sick on them. Even the 3DS camera's crap. But, you know, it just gives you that, you know, the bit of nostalgia vibes, you know, early 2000s kind of vibe. So
that's very cool. I like it a lot.
I just man, I forgot to show you the one thing. So I went to go see, I've been to two K-pop concerts. I went to one last night and I went to one the night before. The one I went to see on Wednesday night, they're touring in Europe right now. They did like Germany beforehand. Someone took a 3DS with them, and what they sometimes do on stage is, if you're in the front row, they'll take your phone and do a recording. Someone whipped out a 3DS right for them to do a recording with on stage, and so I've got the video. It's so funny. She's so confused, but she was like, "Give me, have a look at my 3DS." She's like, "What?" And so she takes a video with the fucking 3DS. And I was just like, crazy. I think this is so funny. She's like, what is this? And then she starts recording. This is so sick.
That's amazing. That is hilarious.
It's just such a weird thing to do.
Everyone's going to be 3DS recording now.
Yeah, so
take out all my old ones and sell them, mate.
Yeah, or mate, I told you, like, it's weird how, like, just random stuff. If you stick to something long enough, obviously, like, when me and my friends were talking about the mullet, you know, like, shit comes in and out, bro. Like,
dude, the mullet's never been cool.
It is now. Cool. People are fucking rocking the mullet at the moment, bro.
It's not cool, though. It's such a terrible look. Put a mullet out there, cut it off. It's not cool. It was never cool when it was cool.
Damn.
And it's not cool now.
My point is, trends come and go. Trends come and go. Like, fashion trends, hairstyles.
I'm not having it with a mullet, dude. I'm not agreeing with you. Mullet will never look good. Never. It's like a handlebar mustache, dude. Come on.
Well, I'm not sensing a lot of love for the mustache, but for the
mustache.
For the mullet, sorry.
A strong Tom Selleck look. But you know what I mean. The mullet's never a good look, dude. I've seen a few people recently trying the mullet.
Uh-huh.
I think you should get a mullet.
Nah, I'm good.
No. If you have that much conviction into it, I think
it doesn't suit me.
In the comment section below, enough people.
Ignore what they said. It's not happening.
I think no, honestly, mate. If you believe in something you should run like lead by example on it. Honestly, I think I will support you in this.
No, okay, I'll drop it now. If I qualify for Worlds this year, I'll grow out a mullet for Worlds. There you go.
That'd be enough time by the time you qualify.
We'll say no. I'm gonna win Barca next week, bro, and then I'm qualified. It's fine.
Excellent.
Okay. Boom.
Excellent. And then we're gonna have a full year of mullet.
Full year of mullet.
Mulletinio. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna love it. I'm gonna enjoy it. You might change my mind about the whole mullet thing.
I will.
I'm never agreeing.
I'm gonna rock
any
it
level
so hard. You're gonna then grow a mullet.
No,
then Tasha's gonna leave you because she's like, "What have you done? I can't believe you've grown a mullet."
Yeah, pretty much.
I think that's pretty much it. That is it for today, guys.
Strong feelings about mullets.
Ending on some strong feelings. But, you know, it's exciting. Next week, the DLC would have dropped. Lee would have done loads of content. But Lee might have finished it by then. I would have won Barca.
The verges of Scott and growing a mullet, which I'm more excited about than anything else. So... let's get rooting for Scotty Boy next week in Barcelona. It's going to be good. I want to see this mullet.
I want to win a tournament so bad. So I'll take the trade-off. So I'd love it.
You have to dye your hair blonde, like brown, though. It has to be brown. It can't be a dirty blonde mullet. It has to be like a proper brown mullet.
Damn.
You got to go brown. Even black, that might be... Yeah, we might do that.
Black doesn't fit my skin tone.
Doesn't fit my skin.
No, it looked too weird.
Just spray it down, you'll be fine. So, like Scott says, we got a lot coming up next week. I hope in between now and our next episode, if you are playing the DLC, the Teal Mask, you have an absolutely amazing time playing it. And we'll look forward to talking everything Teal Mask next week on the pod. Obviously, we do wish Scott good luck in Barcelona as well. He will give us an update with how the tournament went as well next week, which I am very much looking forward to.
We will probably record the episode before I go, so you won't find out. Send it to afterwards because it's on Friday, isn't it?
So you'll be there on Friday. Yeah,
I'll be there on Friday, so we'll have to record it on Wednesday or Thursday.
It'll be a Teal Mask episode.
There'll be plenty of stuff to cover. So make sure you tune in back on the following Monday, on Friday to Monday. So
cool. All right then. Well,
it'll be fantastic.
So before we hear back from Scott, so we'll wrap it up there. Thank you so much, mate. Great.
If you're listening on Spotify, please leave us a review. It helps a lot. And on iTunes, Apple Music, that would help us. Thank you so much. We appreciate everyone that listens. Obviously, if you've made it this far on the episode, thank you so much. And if you're watching on YouTube, leave a like and, you know, share this with your friends if they like Pokemon. And always, we're open for, you know, suggestions. You know, if they think we can improve on... You know, a bit of criticism never hurt anyone. You know, as long as it's nice criticism, you know what I mean? There's a way to go.
The only improvement we need is you to grow a mullet. If everyone agrees with me, just leave the word mullet in the comment section below.
I'm actually not going to any events this season now. I've just decided.
We'll fund it just for the mullet.
You know, I'll take it. All right, guys. So we will see you guys next week. Goodbye.